federal government has shut down. My thoughts, along with an interview with former president and Judge Christian Bo. As of now, the federal government is shut down. I have a lot of thoughts. Most of them are negative toward pretty much everyone involved. I'm frustrated and currently have a touch more free time now that Puerto Rican reincorporation has been completed. So there's a long monologue in place of the usual second interview, which was slated to be President Howard Elkridge. I actually just wrapped up that discussion with him since it was delayed for a few days for his family emergency. I expect that episode to be out in the next couple of days. He had a pretty interesting announcement that relates to the ongoing issues that I'm going to be discussing today. Before all that, I have a chat with former president and now judge Christian Bo. Judge Bo, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's glad to hear. Good to hear from you again. Obviously, we're a little bit constrained on what you're able to like ethically discuss since you're a judge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this interview might be a little bit less hard-hitting than I'm known for. But I think there's value in hearing from people as kind of a exit interview who have kind of stepped away from the spotlight. So just to kind of start, like, how has your adjustment been in the move from the White House to the courts? How has that been a different experience for you?
I have a lot more free time now, a lot of time to spend with my family, which, of course, I did not have over the year I spent in elected office. Of course, I did have that brief tenure in the Senate, and I was honored to serve Jefferson and represent them for the about a month or so that I was there. But I'm glad I have a new opportunity, and I think it's safe to say that my new job does not take as much time as some of my other ones. But of course, I am ready to give it my all when the time comes, and we do have cases filed to argue and preside over.
What really prompted that decision? Because it's a pretty natural endpoint for a lot of careers to, you would think, get to the end of a presidential term and say, okay, I'm done now. Please never speak to me again. You took the route of going to the Senate for a while. What brought you out of the Senate midterm there?
What brought me out of the Senate? Well, the president discussed with me the prospects of a potential nomination to the district court. And I did mull it over and discussed it with my wife, and we decided that it would be good for me to take a step back and in a role that's more quiet and peaceful, and I can spend the years with my family, the next few years, which are crucial for my young kids, and make up for lost time.
Mm-hmm. Speaking on the family end there, and I know I've spoken before, my fiance is a little bit more camera shy than I am, and he was not wildly thrilled when I kind of re-entered public life from the judgeship. How has the change really affected your family life? Like you mentioned, you're getting more time there, but is it just a different world to be able to not try and raise a family in the most popular house in the world, the best known address in the country? How has that changed your experience? How has it changed your experience as a parent, as a husband?
Yeah, my family definitely likes not having cameras on them all the time in the entire world. At the first family of the United States, and they did enjoy the 4 months. I'm not sure they could have lasted 4 years if we were still using that time, but they are definitely happier to settle down and not have the military and the Secret Service watching their every move and things like that.
No, I'm glad to hear that. I know, like I said, it's a tough time for those who get brought along into that kind of spectacle, who aren't really directly choosing.
Definitely,
it.
So yeah.
I'm glad to hear, particularly for the kids, that they've had the ability to settle down a little bit. Speaking more on your end, as someone who did actively choose it, how has your life changed in this quieter role? And do you, in any way, kind of miss the day-to-day madness, the chaos of it all?
I'll be honest and say, no, I don't really miss it. Every day waking up and having a crisis to solve or someone to argue with something over, whether it be in my party or another, you know, I was a lawyer, so of course I enjoy arguing, but doing it every day, not my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm making up for the year of movies and TV shows and books, which I missed.
Yeah. Right. Staying within the constraints of your position, how do you feel about the changes in the country that have taken place since you kind of entered a political life? Has that taken in the direction you anticipated when you were a politician, or is there has there been a shift that you weren't really expecting?
I would say it was more or less what I was expecting, of course. I don't think it's controversial to say the pendulum swings in politics all the time. We have months where the political left has a one party state basically, and then a few months later we have a the right wing nearly sweeps every state, every seat in an election. I don't think that's a controversial thing to say. So on general, the political atmosphere right now, it's not really surprising to me, how things changed.
Okay. What would you say or maybe this isn't the best way to ask this. Maybe we'll go both ways. What would you want your legacy to be in the political world or just in general now that you're kind of stepping back? And then what do you think it actually is at this point?
What I want my legacy to be, that's a good question. I would say competence and ability. I would say that I had a I not to toot my own horn, but I would say I had a pretty good 4 months as president, for better or for worse. What I think it is, I think a lot of people see me, just being honest, as overly partisan. And while I would disagree with that, I think that we see that a lot in people's opinions of their elected officials these days, basically everyone.
Do you think that's gotten worse? And maybe this is my own reading starting to get the best of me, or these algorithms are getting to me and figuring out what I click on. But the accusations of extreme partisanship seem to have, from what I've been keeping an eye on, really picked up in recent history. Have you noticed that at all in whatever keeping up with politics you do these days? And do you think that's a healthy direction for the country, or is that something we should try and back away from?
So I would say before 2018, it was definitely very partisan, and I would say we had a pretty steep drop off up until probably around the very end of Garland's term as president, where we had a pretty
Ouch.
solid era
Starting to sound like my fault.
of right before right in that
I'll try
general
not to take
area.
that one personal.
Everyone kind of doing the hold hands, Hakuna Matata, sort of deal. And then we kind of got into this cycle, and I'll only comment about things before I left the White House, of every month having a budget fight, that lasts for days on days on end. It's the only thing on the headlines. So I would say it's definitely gotten worse, and yeah.
Yeah, as someone who is still writing some of those headlines, I'm hoping that by the time this podcast gets out and we're recording Friday night, I don't even know. Listeners know me now. I try to get 2 interviews. Some people are being difficult with scheduling, so honestly, I'd have no clue when this is going to make it. Hopefully, my point with that is that by the time this finally does come out, I can quit writing headlines about budget fights and we can just have
Yeah.
that behind
And then
us.
two months later it comes right back again.
Oh, I know. They'll never end, but just this
Yep.
particular one would be nice to
Yeah.
stop. I spoke a bit about your legacy and how you think you'll be remembered, how you want to be. Do you have any significant regrets, and I'll kind of do the same way, in your political life or beyond that you kind of want to share?
Significant regrets. I wouldn't say I have any significant regrets. I mean, running for president is a big one. On a more serious note, I really can't say I have anything serious. I mean, I enjoyed basically everything I've done. A pretty checkered career in just about the span of a year. Of course, there are comments which I regret making and things I regret saying. But nothing super major, which would have changed history.
For sure. All right, that is what I had prepared for you. Anything else you'd like to talk about while you're here or that you want to share with the audience?
Not really. I can't think of anything else. Of course, I can only speak about so much, and it is interesting watching from the sidelines, and of course, I still have my own personal convictions about where I'd like to see the country going, but I will always do my best to to remain impartial on the bench, and if something did arise where I believed I wouldn't be able to uphold the oath I swore to be impartial, and I would withhold myself from presiding over a case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose I can bring up one other thing to ask. And I assume you took a position relatively recently, and you're anticipating being there for a little while. But how do you feel about the trend that we've seen kind of recently of both the judgeships being made up primarily of former politicians, and then of those politicians slash judges returning to politics after the fact? And I am guilty of this myself, but I think I had a little bit of a cop-out because Puerto Rico was on fire, and mm-hmm. that was a crisis situation that really needed to be resolved. But we've seen it in other areas too, where I would personally say there was less of a pressing issue.
Yeah.
Do you think that's healthy for the judiciary and for public perception of that legitimacy?
I would say that a former politician being appointed to the court and staying there for a long while is fine. But I would say someone being appointed to a court and then leaving in just a few days or a few months is definitely unhealthy, because it basically shows if someone's on a court leaving as a high profile politician in a party, and then they're on the court for a few months and then they go right back, it's basically putting into question, you know, whether this person was truly impartial on the bench. I must question where all the other judges went. Are they just not interested anymore? You know, we have millions of competent lawyers in the country, but I mean, we make do with what we have.
Yeah, Lana seems to be the one shining exception out of all that.
Who's
dedicated himself to his craft. but yeah, a lot of questions there outside of that one particular courtroom. All right, Judge Bo, thank you again for coming on. I appreciate
you taking
the time.
Of course, thank you for having me. Of course, anytime.
I recorded the interview with Judge Bo a short while ago and mentioned that I hoped that the budget fight would be done by the time I got the episode released. Not only did this release take much longer than I expected, but even in spite of that, the budget crisis continues even now. At midnight, the federal government shut down. Non-essential federal workers and contractors will be barred from coming to work and will not be paid until a funding bill is passed. The core of this fight is dueling red lines on each side's budgets. No new taxes or deficit spending, coupled with a change in Senate rules that blocks consideration of bills that would cause a deficit. No abolition of existing federal departments or agencies. It was immediately clear that each side was going to try and bend the lines of the other. The right flank of Congress and the administration have had issues with the rollout of their attempt at a budget. Their proposal had a number of errors, and it appeared that the initial document released to the public was an unfinished draft of their true proposal. Additionally, an error caused the bill to run against the Senate rule against deficits. The left capitalized, sending their media groups to attack their opposition while pretending to be honest brokers. Take Politico, run by Global Labor Congressman XRT, and purportedly a straight news organization, referring to Senator Ted Dett as Senator Benedict Arnold in discussing the change to Senate rules. The Lone Star, operated by Congressman Miguel, who loudly left the LRP recently, continues to refer to this crisis as the LRP shutdown, in spite of ongoing developments, which I will detail shortly here. House Majority Leader Joe Ostrodo, operating the Washington Bugle, wrote that the right chokes, the left marches on to victory, which to me seems very strange as the government is shut down. PIRSA, run by Senator Malcolm, part of GOP leadership, writes that the government has entered another shutdown, this time at the hands of Libertarian Republicans. Dixie News Leader, run by Congressman Soren Dillinger, who again loudly left the LRP recently, continued that loudness in simply posting a blood-red graphic reading, "Elkridge shutdown in full effect," in all caps. The Workers' Press, as we discussed last week, which is run by Jefferson GOP Member of Parliament Freedom, at least doesn't pretend to be unbiased when writing, "The LRP has done this to America." That was a bit long-winded, and it won't be the last time, but it's important. Elected partisans run to their news orgs and pretend that their perspective is the news. They run public relations for the politicians because they are the politicians, and every one of them has a reason to hurt their political opponents and cover up the flaws in their own side when it comes to this budget battle and other battles. I give this information so that you can read whatever you like, and I read all of the groups that I mentioned. But you have to know about the conflicts of interest that they have, and if they won't tell you about them, I will. Similar issues are present on the right, and I have this myself. I'm a politician. I run a news organization, but I make a point to be very clear about where my biases are. The left wing seemed to have momentum, demanding that the right pass the left budget in its entirety because of the flaws in the administration's proposal. Here's the deal. The left does not have total power. The right does not have total power. Neither side has a public mandate to run roughshod over the other in negotiations. Divided government demands compromise. When that compromise can't be found in a timely manner, the obvious solution is to pass a continuing resolution to buy some more time. President Elkridge came out against another continuing resolution, except in particular circumstances, to pressure Congress to work together before he had to leave for a family emergency, which is also why I'm doing a very long talk here instead of interviewing him, and he will be on the show probably next episode. The issue was further complicated when numerous errors were found in the left's, quote, people's budget, undercutting their claims of competence that would have been hurled at the right when similar issues were found in their budget. Funnily enough, the left decided that it was possible to amend out issues when it was their budget under the microscope, when the proposal from their opponents had to be thrown out the window. The House passed a left-wing budget in spite of the errors, demonstrating that apparently no one in Washington can muster the staff to run these massive bills up against a calculator. The left caucus's mantra throughout this fight has been that they work for the people and that the right works for themselves. The, quote, people's budget would solve all their woes, and if the right didn't get in line, they were against the people, despite the obvious lie considering that the people also voted in an LRP Senate and president. But when the late discovery of errors in the left budget ground passage of anything to a halt, the right stepped in to offer a continuing resolution to fund the government and allow the issues to be worked out. It's common sense. Don't put normal people out of work while Congress figures itself out. Buy some time. That's not the way that it's going. The left and their independent allies are in the process of voting down the CR, and in turn are keeping the government shut down. We have to ask, which people are they supposedly working for? Because not everything is a political fight. And it's complicated when each side starts adding in extra bills that they couldn't necessarily pass on their own and attaching it to the budget so that it looks like it has to pass. There's a tug of war here, but that has to stop when it starts affecting the real people who are depending on functional government for their livelihoods, for different services. The left-wing budget and left-wing politicians working for the people. Congressman Aegis Phoenix, Global Labor, Jefferson, voted to put the people who staff our national parks as rangers, educators, or even gift shop workers out of a job. Congressman Miguel, independent, Dixie, voted to put the people who process requests for housing vouchers, which go to low-income individuals and families, out of a job, and to ensure that the people applying do not receive assistance. Congressman Cedar Purdy, independent, Dixie, voted to shut down the office that handles job discrimination complaints, ensuring that the people filing to simply be able to do their jobs without facing obstacles based on who they are cannot be helped. Congressman Soren Dillinger, independent, Jefferson, voted to shut down federal research operations, ensuring that scientific advancement in combating climate change is stopped. Congressman Epsilon LeClaire, Global Labor, Jefferson, voted to put people running national museums and the National Zoo out of work and to ensure that families cannot make those memories and that children cannot be inspired there. Congressman James Order, independent, North, voted to stop all federal aid to people living on Native American reservations, including health clinics and food pantries. Congressman XRT 17, Global Labor, North, voted to put all of the people who work in custodial and food service for the federal government out of a job, and with those on work visas, as many such employees are, to put their immigration status at risk. To those who voted to shut down the government, which people are you working for? because it's not any of them. Our next episode with President Howard Elkridge should be out soon. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss it. The Weekly is a public record podcast.